It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Those are lines from the poem The New Colossus by Emma Lazarus. They are, of course, inscribed on the base of the Statue of Liberty. The New Colossus is also the name of a new play written by the Actors Gang and actor Tim Robbins, who also directs the play. It features 12 actors telling 12 different stories about immigration to the United States from around the world. The play is touring, and it will be performed at Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City on Saturday, February 29th, and writer and director Tim Robbins is on the line with me now. Hello, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for talking with me. And I know that a lot of people probably hear about this play and think, oh, this must be a response to the Trump administration's immigration policies. But the idea for this play actually started before that. Tell me about your inspiration.
Yeah, we started it when Obama was president, and during the Syrian crisis, and we were seeing the response to that, and also the rhetoric that was being thrown around, calling people that were fleeing a war zone potential terrorists, mothers and children, and we just thought there's something wrong with that, and it's not who we believe we are as a people. And so I started asking people in the company to tell their own stories, to research their own stories of immigration, whether it was their own or their mother's or their grandparents or whether it dated back to the Mayflower. It didn't matter. What were the stories of immigration? What were the challenges faced? What were they leaving behind? And we started to really here's some amazing stories of survival. The cast are writing their own ancestors' stories. And so one thing we came to realize very quickly was that there's a shared story here. And the story starts with an individual that says no, that says, I will not tolerate this anymore. I will not tolerate famine or religious oppression, or I will not tolerate fascism or communism. I cannot live in my home anymore because this situation makes it impossible for me to be here. And then had the courage to leave, risking their lives to leave. A lot of people didn't make that decision. A lot of people stayed behind and didn't make it. But we're not descended from those people. We're descended from people that made the choice to leave and then had the strength, the tenacity, the intelligence to survive an amazingly difficult journey, oftentimes killing people along the way. We're not descended from the people that didn't make it. We're descended from the people that wound up in a new country, oftentimes without anything, sometimes not even speaking the language, and then found a way to make a life for themselves, a career, and create future opportunity for their kids and their kids' kids. That's a pretty extraordinary story. That's a pretty extraordinary individual. And that is something that we share, whether it was people that came over on the Mayflower or people that are trying to cross the border now. There's a certain unification of spirit that all of these people share. Now, we have to also say, this is for most of us, but there are also people that were here when we got here. And we try to include this story as well in our talkbacks. And also the people that were brought here against our will, the people that were enslaved and whose cultures oftentimes were eliminated, their histories eliminated. We tell the story of 1864, a woman that is escaping the South after the Civil War because this newly found freedom was immediately responded to by the rise of the Ku Klux Klan. Many people had to leave the South, the Great Migration North. It wound up with new families starting in places like Detroit and Chicago. This is also a story of migration and refugees.
The stories that you tell, I mean, you mentioned just a couple there, they take us through history in the United States. Can you give me an idea of the time span that we're talking about?
We're talking about stories from 1864, 65 through present day. We've got people that immigrated from Finland and wound up in Superior, Arizona. We've got people that fled the Iranian Revolution when the Ayatollah came to power. They wound up in Los Angeles in 1978. We've got people that got out of Russia during communism, Hungary out of communism, made the journeys to get away from that. The story of a woman who had sent her baby out of a war-torn Vietnam to live with nuns in Paris, and after when Saigon fell, had to get out because her family was connected to the South Vietnamese government and would have been re-educated, brainwashed, or killed. This woman somehow got out of there, found her baby in Paris, came over to Los Angeles, and her granddaughter is in the play.
Wow.
Story of a group of acrobats and a magician who were in Malaysia, a Chinese-American man who had a tattoo of an American flag on his arm, had to wear long-sleeved shirts in the tropical heat at all times because if the Japanese soldiers had seen this flag, they would have killed him. He somehow gets a family of eight to San Francisco in 1946. You know, this granddaughter of this man, this magician, is writing his story and telling the story of her mother, who was 8 years old at the time in this acrobatic troupe.
Wow. So then the actors are not all speaking English either. Tell me a little bit about the use of languages in these stories.
Well, it is all in English. You do understand it. There are times when they speak in their origin languages, but that's translated in super titles. And there are times when they are trying to speak with each other and do not understand each other, and that we do not translate, because we want the audience to share that experience of what it is to understand kind of what someone's saying. Definitely understand the emotion behind it, but not understand the specifics of each word. And that's kind of an experience that every immigrant has to face at some point. Imagine fleeing violence and certain death in a war-torn area and getting to a border and not being able to speak the language of the people at the border. How do you explain to them that there was no choice for you, that you had to leave, that this was happening, that they were going to kill me? How do you say that and get a border guard that doesn't understand your language to understand the necessity of your crossing over that border?
What do you want the audience to take away from this? I mean, these are obviously incredibly gripping and moving stories, but you also clearly have a message that you want to send with this.
I don't want to send a message, but what I do is I come out at the end of the play and I have a conversation with the audience. I ask where people are from. I ask if there's any refugees or immigrants in the audience, whether they want to share their story. I ask if there's any sons or daughters of immigrants or refugees, whether they want to share their story. Grandsons, granddaughters of immigrants or refugees. Great-grandsons, great-granddaughters, whole hands go up on each one of these. But before you know it, the entire audience has raised their hand. And some people share incredible stories of their ancestors and their ancestors' survival. Some people share their own experiences. Some people tell us that watching the play gave them a great new appreciation for their great-grandfather and what he must have gone through. Some people who have gone through this journey that are in our audience say how beautifully it tells their own story, even though the specifics weren't the same. The experiences that they have on the way towards freedom reminded them of their own journey. There's many tears, there's many moments of shared experience, and then these talkbacks start after the end of the play, And then it transforms into this whole other thing. Because what we realize is that we are a community. We are sitting here in this audience. We don't know the people that are with us, around us. And sometimes we don't even know the person we came to play with until the end. And they started sharing something. I had a woman in North Carolina say, we've been friends, there's two women, we've been friends for 20 years, and I have never heard this story that she told in front of the audience. It's that shared common bond that we have. And in these times when we have so much division and so many people trying to divide us for various reasons, my purpose at this point to travel around with this thing and to sit in audiences with people that have so much in common with each other. We have to be reminded of that in these times. We do have a common ancestor. We have a common DNA that said, I will survive. I will create a new life in freedom. Whether it's on the Mayflower or yesterday, it's the same thing that drove the people towards this freedom.
The audiences that are going to go to a play like this at a theater, like Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City, it's a little bit of a self-selecting audience, the people who go to the theater. And the tickets for this event are very affordable. Are there, have you made an effort to try to make this accessible and to try to draw people who just wouldn't normally be part of that audience?
Well, as you said, they're affordable, which is not something you always find in theater.
That
right?
is so true.
That is part of why we want it that way. Because we want people that don't normally experience theater. We definitely want people that are theater lovers, because you'll see something that you've never seen before. But we also want people that are not particularly theater goers. And we had a lot of that in North Carolina. We had people that were regular theater goers that were saying that they had never experienced anything like that in a theater. And we had people that had never been to the theater before saying, I can't wait to go see more theater. That's, for us, the ideal audience. In Los Angeles, every week when we're doing a show, we have one night that is a pay-what-you-can night. Whether you're broke or have, you know, a dollar, whatever you have, we'll take it. It's an open door. Because theater shouldn't be an elitist event. It's not the way it was conceived. It was conceived as something that can gather people in a room to remind them of their common humanity. And that, if we can achieve that every night, which we have been doing, it is fulfilling the reason why we're doing this in the first place. We don't want to make theater that distracts. We want to make theater that creates community. And if when we are dealing with an audience, like my teacher in 1984 that taught me the method that we use, he said something that profoundly changed me. He said, listen, never assume that any member of your audience, when you step out on stage, that any member of that audience could afford the ticket they paid for to get in tonight. And then on top of that, you should assume that that person walked 10 miles to get to this theater because they had no money left for bus fare. That's the respect you owe every audience member when you step on stage. And that, for me, was a profound shift. I was in my mid-20s at the time. I was a successful actor at the time. But this man reminded me of what the contract is. If someone makes a choice to spend time with you, you owe them all of your energy and all of your emotion. And so what we do at the Actors Gang has always been informed by this, that this is a great blessing to be able to tell this story in front of these people that made the choice to be here. And particularly in this time, when there's so many choices and so many distractions as far as entertainment goes. You could sit at your phone at home. You could go to theaters. You could go watch a streaming thing. You could binge watch something. But no, you made the choice to be in this theater. That's a big thing for us. So we treat it like that. And so then on top of that, to be able to talk to the audience and get them to tell their stories at the end, we've been traveling around with cameras. And in North Carolina, we would invite some of the audience members backstage and we'd film them talking about their ancestors. And we've got this most amazing interviews.
Can you tell me about one of the stories that really surprised and moved you?
Syrian refugees that were talking about their own direct experience. People then, the next person telling about their grandmother's survival in landing with nothing in New York City. I heard a story about an 8-year-old girl who was put on a boat in Europe in 1908 with a photograph. That's all, just one photograph of a relative in somewhere in New York. No address. And the 8-year-old girl landed in New York Harbor with this photograph and somehow found her family. And that woman is in our audience now because of the strength and tenacity and intelligence of that 8-year-old girl. Then we had another story of this woman that said, I'll tell you about an American soldier. He was liberating a concentration camp, Buchenwald, after the war, part of a troop. He saw this woman start to falter, and he starts running towards her to get to help her. His sergeant says, stand down, private. That's not what we're doing right now. He disobeys his sergeant, gets to the woman before she falls, catches her, carries her to the field hospital, gets in trouble with the sergeant. After he's out of trouble, goes and visits this woman in the field hospital. This woman in our theater says, that was my mother and my father.
Wow. Tim Robbins, thank you so much for talking with me.
My pleasure. Can't wait to see y'all in Iowa.
Tim Robbins, of course, a well-known actor, but he also works with the Actors Gang, and he's been part of writing this play. He's the director of the play, The New Colossus. It is touring around the country right now, and it's going to be performed at Hampshire Auditorium in Iowa City on Saturday, February 29th. Tim Robbins will be in Iowa City as well and talking with the audience after the show. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.